Secretary of State John Kerry says there is just a big a threat out there to as or excuse me that there is a threat out there that rivals terrorism, that rivals a nuclear outbreak, that rivals disease epidemics, and that threat is climate change.
Terrorism, epidemics, poverty, the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. The reality is that climate change ranks right up there with every single one of them.
What a doofus. Do the American people buy what he is saying? Of course not. This is a conversation where you have elite America continuing to bang a drum that the rest of America is not listening to anymore. And I got to tell you, I think John Kerry and others, I don't know if you saw Bill Nye, quote, the science guy. Bill, you know his background, don't you? Bill Nye, the science guy who's debating climate change with a Tennessee congresswoman. Bill Nye was a Boeing engineer, a young, geeky-looking Boeing engineer who had a fascination with science, and he used to, and so he got a gig on the old comedy sketch show Almost Live. And that gig was, you know, he would do really neat scientific experiments on the air that were really cool and that people thought were really neat. And that's how he got his gig. And then he went from Bill Nye the Science Guy there down to California, Walt Disney, and that should have been his meal ticket. He should have been the face of science education for kids, but somehow that didn't work out. And so now he's stepping into political issues, you know, debating science versus creation. Just a week or so ago, and then yesterday on Meet the Press. And, you know, I watched the debate, but it was just so dry and boring. And the, quote, climate alarmism community not very pleased with how Bill Nye carried himself in that conversation. But anyway, you had President Obama in Northern California at the end of last week blaming the lack of precipitation on climate change. So he's promising $1 billion in aid for drought-stricken California. And then you have the president and others, like John Kerry, blaming excessive precipitation in the Northeast and snow, which I kind of thought happened during winter, on a climate change as well. Here's the coverage on Fox News Sunday, Chris Wallace and George Will, beginning with Chris Wallace.
President Obama in drought-ridden California Friday proposing a $1 billion fund to research and help communities deal with the effects of climate change. And we're back now with the panel. Well, the president's case may seem a bit hard to make when the eastern half of the country is in the grips of a brutal winter, but as you heard the president say, climate change accounts for everything from drought to floods. George, do you buy it?
No, and neither does science. But I'm one of those who are called deniers. And the imputation is that I deny climate change. It would be impossible to state with greater precision the opposite of my view, which is that, of course, the climate is changing. It's always changing. That's what gave us the medieval warm period. That's what gave us, subsequent to that, for centuries, the Little Ice Age. Of course it's changing. When a politician, on a subject implicating science, hard science, economic science, social science, says the debate is over, you may be sure of two things. The debate is raging and he's losing it. So I think, frankly, as a policy question, Chris, Holman Jenkins, Kim's colleague at the Wall Street Journal, put it perfectly. The only question is, how much money are we going to spend? And how much wealth are we going to forego creating in order to have zero discernible effect on the environment?
Perfect. Yes. Zero discernible effect on the environment. I'll tell you what John Kerry and Bill Nye and the other climate alarmists remind me of. Do you remember back in the 1970s when we were told the world was running out of oil? That we had an oil shortage caused by we've overdrilled, we've exhausted the world's resources. Now we're just going to have to live with it. Because we live in, remember this phrase, an era of limits, close quote. Jimmy Carter saying that by the late 1980s, this is one of his speeches from the Oval Office when he was president from 1977 to 81, by the late 1980s, we would be unable to import any more oil. These people today remind me of those people back then. Today, because understand, the people who were saying that we were running out of oil, the people who were saying that we live in an era of limits, that the energy shortage is the real deal. And keep in mind, they won that debate. They were wrong, but they won that debate. That's why we have a Department of Energy. And that's why we had 55-mile-an-hour speed limits. And when scientists or others stood up to deny, to complain, to disagree with the claim that we were running out of oil, what was the response? Well, you're just in the pocket of the big energy companies. You're in the pocket of big oil. Or you're such an extremist, you're way over there on the fringes. What do they say to people like George Will, people like John Carlson and others who say that global warming alarmism is just that, alarmism? Oh, you're just in the pocket of big oil. Oh, you're just an extremist. You're way out there on the fringes. They say the exact same thing. We have had now a 17-year lull in global warming, which, is, by the way, is why they stopped saying global warming. Back in the early 1980s, they called it the greenhouse effect. By the 1990s, it was global warming. And then global warming gave way to climate change, which George Will has said it exactly right. You've heard me say it a million times. Of course, there's climate change. It's always been changing. When hasn't the climate changed? In the constant state of flux. But they, along with the 17-year lull in global warming, there were, I think, 73 peer-reviewed studies, peer-reviewed computer models, back starting in the late 1990s to the early aughts. Do you know how many of them predicted this lull? Zero. Not one of them. So the more they are proven wrong, or the more that their models fall short, or the more that predictions, dire predictions they made, oh, polar bears are going to die, the more that these things turn out to be not the case, the more urgent their warnings and the less patience they show with people who are disagreeing with them. George Will has it exactly right. When people say, the debate is over, there is no debate. Number one, that means the debate is going on and they are now losing it. And they are losing it. On a list of 20 political issues that Americans are most concerned about, 20 issues? Climate change, global warming, was number 19. The American people have moved on. They are ahead of our elites who are hopelessly stuck. It would be like arguing that we're still running out of oil in the late 1980s, long after it became clear that the reason we had an oil shortage is that we had a shortage of good economic policy. Once Ronald Reagan came in, deregulated energy prices and had the market set the price, two things happened. Number one, plenty of oil for everyone. Number two, price of oil went down, way down, and stayed there for a long time. It's coming up here on 17 to make that 18 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI.
News and views you can't get anywhere else. This is Talk Radio 570 KVI.
22 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, John Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Lines open 206-421-5757. Outside King County, 1-888-312-5757. To the phones we go out in Woodinville this morning. Paul, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Well, here's my question for you, John. How long globally do you burn 100 million barrels of oil a day and say if the emissions are inconsequential? Not only the emissions, forget that, but what about all the heat released by all of that? How long do you just say, oh, it makes no difference?
Well, it might make a difference in the immediate area where it's happening, but in terms of global atmospheric temperatures?
You're saying the globe is just too vast, right?
Well, I'm saying that if it's measured, then where's the measurement?
The measurements have been there.
So why have we had periods where, not periods, but decades, where we've had vast increases in burning fossil fuels and vast increases in population and in industrialization, say from the 40s to the 70s, but we had a cooling period. And then, again, with increases in population and industrialization and in carbon output, we had a 20, 25-year...
For when what you call temperature, there's a difference between what's called...
No, I'm talking about climate, not just about, you know, temperature here and there. Go ahead.
Well, I'm talking about globally. First of all, when you talk about small amounts of temperature, what keeps the planet from incinerating by virtue of the sunlight is the oceans. And so we have something that's called heat versus temperature. You can have increases in heat and the temperature not go up very much. Water is able to absorb huge amounts of heat without changing temperature very much. That doesn't mean that the water, the energy isn't there, and that the in other words, the temperature of the atmosphere or the heat, the temperature doesn't have to rise significantly for there to be an increase in heat and heat being trapped. But the carbon dioxide, you're saying, is like that woman was on, the debate yesterday?
Marsha Blackburn, congresswoman from Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Who says that it's only changed a little bit. Well, let me ask you this. If carbon dioxide content changed, the atmospheric percentage changed by 0.5%, would that be a problem?
Well, the answer is yes, but the other part of that is, how do you know it's due to carbon? I mean, when we hear that there's the debate is over, within climate scientism, within the community of climate scientists, there's actually a prolonged and very fascinating debate going on about the role of clouds and whether clouds facilitate or tamp down global temperatures.
Uh-huh. Well, I would say that if you look at the planet Venus, that would show you that which is all carbon dioxide, it's the hottest planet in the solar system at 900 degrees. It's twice as hot as Mercury, which is the first one next to the sun, which has no atmosphere. So I would tell you that carbon dioxide clouds have a significant role in heating. I know I don't have much time, so let me just put something out here. You've heard of the book Moby Dick, of course. We're all supposed to have read it in high school.
Yes.
The second epilogue to Moby Dick, Melville discusses, is whaling a good idea? Is it a good thing to do? And one of the things that he says in the second epilogue, kids, check this out, is that whaling, God's creatures are so great and his seas are so vast, there's possibly have an effect on these great creatures and these great oceans? This was published in 1842.
Mm-hmm.
In 1892, by the end of Melville's life, at the year that he died, almost all of the sperm whales and right whales, which were the ones that were hunted,
right,
were gone, which is why the whaling industry was over with. There were no more whales. So to say that we couldn't possibly have an effect on this gigantic earth of God's earth is...
No, but there's a difference between the earth itself and what is on the earth. Of course you can hunt animals to extinction.
You know,
the buffalo is another example. But let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Has the world mm-hmm. been warmer than it is now before man appeared on the planet?
It's been warmer than it is now in 500 years ago.
Right. And has the earth been cooler than it is now?
By very significant
right.
degrees.
So my point is, before man got here, the planet has been both warmer and cooler than it is. Since man has appeared on the planet has been warmer mm-hmm. and cooler than it is.
Yep.
So why do you assume that global temperatures today are a factor of man being here?
Well, because we have different explanations for why. When you talk about natural cycles, okay, first of all, when people say, oh, this is because of natural cycles, I'm going to say, identify which ones. Which ones are you talking about? Okay, which natural cycles are causing this? The other, the periods in the past when we could see where there were, by the way, the average temperature of the Earth overall as the age of the planet is thousands of degrees higher than it is now. Okay, so, but the idea is this, when you could see rises in different kinds of things, and not only, like I said, not only temperature, different effects, and you can see a cause, it's like saying, it's not that there aren't natural cycles, but you can contribute to it. It's like if you happen to have asthma, is it a good idea that you smoke? No. You see? And so what I'm saying is that I ask the question, because I know we're running out of time again.
Right.
When you,
go for it.
When you burn 100 million barrels of oil a day, the waste has got to go somewhere, and the waste has effect. We know that. That's in every system, every biological system that we can look at, even in a micro level, that the waste has an effect. And 100 million barrels a day is going to have an effect. So to say that it can't is just a silly thing to say, if you ask me.
The answer isn't does it have an effect, Paul? The answer to me is what effect? And what is it that's being proposed we do about it that will change that effect? Because Bill Nye, you know, his take on this is, oh, just do everything all at once. And my response to that is no. Public policy is all about value. It's all about, it should be all about cost-benefit. You know, to what degree does it do any good for us to have strict limits on carbon output and China and India and Russia and other big countries do next to nothing? You know, what real effect does that have on global temperatures? And how many jobs are you losing? And how high are people's taxes going? How many opportunities are being forestalled because of that? You're listening to the John Carlson Show. It's coming up on 6:30. Let's get in a few headlines.
Carlson, Beck, Hannity, Levin, Larson, and Savage. Wow. Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Coming up here on 6 minutes to 7 o'clock in the morning, John Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Happy President's Day to all of you. Paul Tukwila, hello. How are you, sir?
Doing very well. And yourself?
All right. Good morning.
Very good. I'm a senior research engineer with a little company called Boeing. We make airplanes. You may have heard of us.
I've heard of you guys.
And I know a little bit about science. When it comes to global warming, the most significant greenhouse gas on the planet is water vapor. If you've ever been in a place with high humidity, you can step out of the shower and 30 seconds later you don't know if you're wiping off water or perspiration. And so if you want to have a test for greenhouse gases, What you do is you look at the difference between the high and low temperature on any given day with similar humidity levels. And, you know, if the overall temperature on the Earth were to go up, that could be because the sun is burning a little hotter, a little more solar activity. If it goes down, it could be because of the sun as well. But greenhouse gases hold heat in. And I was raised in the desert of California in the roaring metropolis of Barstow. The difference between the high and low temperature can be 30, 40 degrees on a hot summer day. It may end up being a, you know, 120 degrees outside, but it's 80 or 90 degrees at night. It cools down that much. If you go down to Atlanta, Georgia on a hot, humid day in the summer, you'll find the difference between the high and low temperature about 6 degrees or less. Sometimes you can't even tell it went down at night. So I went and I looked at the difference between the high and low temperatures of the first 10 days of July in Barstow, California, and it averages 29.5 degrees. It varied by less than a half a degree at random between 1975 and 2010. I checked it every 5 years. Then I went back and I deleted out all the days where it rained, which wasn't many, and those days when they had cloud cover of any kind. And the temperature differential increased to 31.5. And that's just one community. It's a single data point. But the Earth's atmosphere mixes pretty well. If we had a greenhouse effect due to anything, any kind of greenhouse effect, the difference between the high and low would have decreased, and it didn't do it. So based on that, I have to conclude that at least in that location, climate change does not exist due to global warming or due to greenhouse gases.
Let me ask you this. I'm sure you've brought this topic up with your colleagues at Boeing.
Yeah.
What do they think about the, quote, the debate is over, global warming is a certainty, or climate change is a certainty?
You know, the very first thing I heard about global warming...
We got about 40 seconds. Go for
right.
it.
The very first thing I heard about global warming is that the debate was over. And when someone says the debate is over, they don't want the debate, and they're going to lose.
That's the first thing I heard. Oh, you've heard of global warming? Yeah, well, the debate's over.
That's right. And, you know, I had never heard of the debate before, and, I'm pretty up on the news. Most of my colleagues here at Boeing, they just roll their eyes. Some of them, you know, they kind of believe it. They say they can't get their arms all the way around it. You know, engineers know science, and it just doesn't make sense.
Listen, I know I appreciate where you're coming from because, again, as a man of science, you keep an open mind to things, not simply try to, you know, announce a conclusion, look for some evidence that might justify your position, and then say, okay, the debate's over. The debate is ongoing, and as George Will said, we'll play the audio later on. He said, when you hear someone say the debate's over, it usually means that the debate's going on and they're losing it. Thanks a lot, Paul. I appreciate you taking the time to call here.